Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Everyone, and welcome to Dave Sarakin's favorite podcast, The Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad, alongside Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies and Hollywood Heath Pierce. Before we get to our very special guests and my former World Cup teammate, Ben Olsen, who's going to enlighten us about everything he's seen in the game and what he thinks about his former club, DC United, being reunited with Wayne Rooney, I have to let you know that we've been nominated for the best podcast in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. And as always, we appreciate everything that you do for us. So if you enjoy our show as much as we hope you do, then please consider nominating us to advance to the final round. To make that happen, go to podcastawards.com/app/signup and then toggle down to the sports category and find In Soccer We Trust. It doesn't take long and it helps us so much. The link is also in the description and the QR code is in the corner on the YouTubes. All right, Heath, before we bring on the man, the myth, and the legend known as Ben Olsen, what are you expecting to get out of this interview? What do you want to extract from Benny?
I don't know. This guy's obviously a former teammate of ours, but also a coach. So I was nervous. So I put on this coaching hat. You can tell by the shape of the bill.
Oh no.
I want him to have some credit, I want him to feel comfortable, you know, in his environment.
Right.
So I try to come as somebody that, you know, can stand in the technical box or at least look like I can stand in the technical box. So I don't know what to expect, but I'm excited, man.
All right, Charlie, what do you want to get out of Benny here in this interview?
Well, this is my former coach as well. So,
Tack time.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go.
We got the hard one. Wow.
No,
that as tactics.
Yeah. I'd like to know, just in terms of the coaches he's had to deal with on the sideline, who he admired, who he thought was doing a good job, tactically, and just kind of what he thought, if he looked back on his coaching career, what would he change?
No, that's a good one. That's really insightful. I'm like going to get a teary-eyed moment. Okay. So without further ado, it's time to bring him on for his tale of the tape. Standing 5 foot 8 inches tall and weighing 157 pounds out of Middletown, Pennsylvania, he was named as the best college player in the country in 1997 with Virginia University, even though he lost to me and my UCLA Bruins in the final. He then went on to become Rookie of the Year in 1998 with DC United, who he played with his whole career, minus a stint with Nottingham Forest. With DC, he won 2 MLS Cups, including beating me in the 2004 final to get his revenge from college, a CONCACAF Champions Cup and an Open Cup after winning the 2005 Gold Cup, playing at the 2006 World Cup with me, and playing at the 2007 Copa America. I'm struggling here. With me, Heath, and Charlie, he then coached DC United for 11 years, winning an Open Cup and MLS Coach of the Year, but his claim to fame has to be on the cover of FIFA 2001. It's Benny Olsen!
How are you? I'm great. I'm so impressed with you and your ability to talk. I've always been impressed with that my whole life.
That was his best one, to be fair. That's his best one yet. He went.
Are you reading all that, or are you just spitballing?
I can't reveal my secrets, Benny. So here's my first question for you. You had just taken over DC. You're pretty new into your coaching with DC United. I saw you in Philadelphia for the All-Star game. You got named as the All-Star coach. You're leading the MLS All-Stars versus Chelsea.
That's right.
And it was just me and you. We had like 5-10 minutes together before warm up, just sitting there watching the guys. And you're like, hey, I don't know what you want to do with the rest of your career, because I was recently retired. You're like, but coaching isn't it. Like, it's just not. Don't do coaching. Whatever you do, stay away from coaching. And we just laughed and we laughed and we laughed about that, because it was a new, obviously, foray in for you. But as Charlie said before, I mean, you did it 11 years and you won MLS Coach of the Year. So Now that you have the benefit of hindsight, how was that coaching career of yours?
It was funny because early that was basically, about how I thought of, regarding this coaching gig. And, but really it was because I wasn't ready for it, Jimmy. And I talk about this all the time, though. The way I got that job, with no real infrastructure, no real, I didn't know who I was as a leader, as a coach. I didn't know, my game model. I was just swimming. So when you take a job in that manner, it's very, very difficult. And, it took me several years to just get punched over and over and to figure out, again, who I was as a leader and how I wanted to go about the game, right? We all have it in here and we all know who we want to be. But then to explain that to the players and to kind of manage up and manage down, it was a lot for me for a few years. And, I settled in and found a way to survive for a good decade in the job. But, I certainly don't recommend people going right from playing into coaching. If you can find a way to hitch yourself to somebody that knows what they're doing and you can kind of be a fly on the wall for a little bit before you take that job, at least I think it'd be a little bit easier.
Interesting. Jimmy had talked about this recently, that he said that you cut the line, you were unqualified.
I did cut the line.
So that's why we had to get you on because that's the way it was. But now looking back, Ben, so far in your career, do you think that you had more good coaches as a player than bad coaches based on your experience and the difficulties and the challenges of what it is to be on the other side as a manager?
Well, the coaches were different than I think they are today. I just don't think they were they were all managers, really. I didn't necessarily think any of them were tactical. It wasn't a real in-depth look at the game of soccer. I think they all managed different ways, whether it was Thomas Rongen, Bruce Arena, Sarakin. Who else did I have? Ray Hudson for a heartbeat. So they're all just such different. Tommy Sohn, Peter Novak, all these guys were just managers, and they managed in different ways. Some with a stick, some with a carrot. We all know Bruce. Bruce was very influential to me, and probably the most influential coach throughout my career. His ability to kind of read me, read the team, what they needed, get the most out of his players, the best players, and that player who was number 17 on the roster to come in. I always use Mikey Stevens as an example, that comes into a role and does a great job for him to have success. But it's different now. You look at the coaches in the MLS and you look at the data and the sports science, it was just that didn't exist when I was playing. And when some of you guys were playing too, and Chuck, you caught probably a little bit of both, probably you too, Heath, Jimmy, you probably know what I'm talking about.
Benny, what would you say was the hardest challenge or obstacle in coaching? Cause you said you found your groove, but what was the most difficult thing to learn that eventually you felt, okay, now I'm getting a little bit better at this, or I got a hold of it?
Well, my eureka moment was that year where we were last in the league, the worst team in the history of the league. but within that league, we talk about this all the time. Sorry if you've heard this story, but we also won the Open Cup that year against Salt Lake away. And what it showed me that year was clearly like, oh shit, I need help. I am not ready for this. I have a lot of work to do. However, there's also a lot of me that's really good in this job and able to keep a team together and motivated and still in the worst season of the history of the league, still win a championship and keep this team from kind of folding on each other and managing the group. So at the end of the season, I really did a deep dive into my personality. And really what I came out of it was like, I got to get some people around me that will fill in my deficiencies or hide, fill in my voids, so to speak, you know, get this type of coach to do this for me. Cause you can't do it all in managing anymore. I mean, and now it's even worse or it's even more complex. You have so much data and information and you just have to really get your staff right and understand who you are as a person and a leader and say, okay, this, I'm good at this and I'll nail this part. But hey, buddy, you got to do this for me. And that's my role. And you trust other people around you to do their job. And that's when I was, you know, at my best as a coach.
What was the deep dive, though? Like, what was that internal? Was it talking to people? I mean, elaborate a little bit on what the deep dive was.
Yeah, it was talking to coaches. It was being a little bit honest with myself and asking players that just went through that with me. I think I even did a survey. It was doing some personal, some management, what are these Myers Squibbs, whatever, where you fill out these leadership things. And I had a psychologist come and tell me what these results meant. It's one thing to kind of fill this out and get some notes back, but I had someone kind of go over this. And I have a funny story on this. Is he came back and my results were, it was basically some arrows, some dots of what you were in your personality. And he had done Bruce and Bob and some other people because we had the similar UVA backgrounds. And these guys were all in this other pathway. And I was the exact opposite of all them in my personality. And I remember he said to me, he goes, he looked at me almost with a sad face. He's like, you can do this job. He goes, but this job is going to be hell for you. And it's going to be taxing because of your personality. It is going to be a very, very difficult job for you. And I'll never forget. And that's when I said, listen, I can't do all these things. I have to do me, be authentic, manage, motivate, keep a team moving in the right direction. But there's a few guys that I need to make me complete, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm kind of curious as to your thoughts about Wayne Rooney, who seems very early on in his managerial career and maybe is going to be swimming in the same waters that you're discussing, where obviously he's got a plethora of experience, just like you did as a player. And you think he might have it all figured out, but he might need some help. One of the questions before we get into the Wayne Rooney talk, and I want to get your thoughts on him taking over DC. You got to coach him for the two seasons he was there and how you think he's going to do as a manager. But there's a part of me that thinks there's too much analysis and analytics out there. Like I remember when we put heart rate monitors on and I was like, dude, I can point out the guys that are out of shape. It's pretty clear to see. I don't need a goddamn strap around my chest to tell you who's fit and who's not. Does this information help you? Now I understand that it's gotten even more sophisticated and that they can hit like your top speed and how many times you're hitting your top speed throughout a game. But even that, sometimes I think it's lost in the weeds. There's a lot of nuance and subtlety that has to be read between the lines with some of this analysis. What are your thoughts on maybe too much of the statistics and all that crap that's out there? And then give us your thoughts on Wayne Rooney taking over.
Well, it is it's a tool, right? And you know, it's part of this equation. And I think it's great, in particular in the scouting department as well, using some of these metrics and data, especially when it's such a big global sport. And when you're trying to collect players, using that data to size up what the eye test, I think is important. You know, your own team, right? Don't get it twisted. Good players are, you know what a good player is. We see it on television and that's a good player. I don't care what the metrics say, getting talent and spending money on high level players is how you get success. You know, within there, some teams do a really good job of coming up with algorithms and finding these diamonds in the rough and making less mistakes in getting players into their team. Philly comes to mind, where they make very few mistakes on players and they don't spend crazy money, but they seem to get the right guys that
fit. Are you allowed to come on here as a DC United person and talk about how great Philly's doing?
In their academy.
No, they don't. Hey, they don't play the kids right now. Anyways, we can talk about it.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah. I can, Yeah, I'm far enough removed, I think, to compliment other teams. I'm a big fan of Jimmy, and I'm from Pennsylvania, so
that's true.
I think you can overthink it, and I think when you're around this game as much as we have been, and we watch enough soccer, and we've been in the locker room, we know what training sessions look like, that you can sometimes overthink it for sure.
Do you think that your evolution as a person, right? Team, you run into a teammate now that you haven't seen since you played together. You'd been in the trenches. You'd been out on nights out together. You'd been through all these things. Do you think that you have become somebody very different since you've stepped onto the managerial side in terms of just, you know, in terms of your personal growth? Like, do you think you still got that locker room in you? You still got that dog in you that people are saying, or is it Benny Olsen, the manager, the front office guy? I mean, who are we talking? I dressed as a coach today because I wanted you to feel comfortable.
Am I acting too much like a coach?
You
talk like a coach right now. You talk like a coach.
Well, you're asking coaching questions. I mean, listen, if you want to talk about night outs, let's talk about night out.
I'm just asking, just in terms of like your growth. As a person, you talked about going back to being the one that, you know, you got to be you got to do you. Do you think that you've still changed at all within all that? Or is it just the same core you and you build a team around you?
No, it's still core me. Being authentic and maybe Charlie could back me up. Maybe he's, he thinks I'm full of shit, but being authentic is never been my issue. I don't know any other way to be. Of course I've gotten older and I've evolved, but I think that's one of my strengths as a leader and coach is my authenticity and being deep down who I am and who I always have been. The coaching job changes you. It is the managing players and doing that for 10 years constantly without any real lapse there in time it was a long stint but it was enjoyable.
I would say, early on, and I always tell you how grateful I am that you gave me that opportunity to play again. And I was never the same player as I was before the car accident, but I figured out a way to still have success and just grind. Every day was a grind. Every week I had to give twice as much as I used to have every week, and the recovery process was so difficult. But I'd say early on, it was just trying to find the balance between, former teammates, friends, and coaching them and manage them and have not blurring those lines. I think that was probably your biggest challenge, but you were always authentic. I mean, that was never an issue. What I would say is where are you on trainings in Major League Soccer? Cause it goes from manager to manager. Is it too lax? Bruce Arena does like what a lot of managers would do of the older generation. It's like you play Saturday, Sunday, Monday's off. Tuesday is like a light day. You're getting back into it, light jog. You might play a little bit. Wednesday is like your hardest day of the week. Maybe you play 11v11 games, 15 minutes each. Maybe there's a little bit more tactics. And Thursday is another light day.
Yeah.
And Friday is a walkthrough. Then you play the game Saturday. Do you think it's, for Major League Soccer to take it up a notch, you got to be a little bit harder during the week, or you think that's...
That's the old faithful week. I evolved. I mean, that's how I started, right? Those were my influences, and that's what I knew what a rhythm of a week looked like, really basic. But that's where I think sports science really did help me in getting the right people in here to the sports performance side. Has really evolved in maximizing and getting guys ready to fly on game day. I think that has changed. Thursday, I always believed in that Thursday, you barely do anything, right? And you come up a little bit on Friday, but 48 hours to game time, muscles just can't recover. So we changed that as we went. And of course it's a feel too. You lose two in a row and you might have to mix it up and throw a little volleyball in there it's always a feel. You have your structure throughout your week, but there's weeks where you have to twist some things up and make sure you're understanding the mental side of this as well through a long MLS season. Summer's a grind. Summer's a mess, as you remember. Mm. So if you're not mixing it up and keeping this thing fresh, it can be a long season, and that's a real art. You know, some coaches really understand that rhythm, and when to change it up.
I would say you talked about that 2013 season, rock bottom, horrible, but you win the Open Cup. It's a nice trophy. But the following season, you're top of the Eastern Conference. That's the biggest difference from the points total of your 2013 season to 2014. You 42 points, I believe. Yeah. So that's still a record. You really hadn't coached a proper star. You had D-Ro. He won MVP. Incredible. But Wayne Rooney comes into town. Did that really change your viewpoint on trainings? How influential was he with trainings, how you managed? You know, were you having any conversations, or it was like, Wayne, I'm the coach, you just do your thing?
Wayne was easy, man.
Yeah.
Wayne showed up, you know, and he just played. He just loved the game. He loved playing. I think he enjoyed our training sessions, and you know, Wayne didn't overthink the game. He wasn't one of these guys coming in saying, "Hey, you know, let's change our structure." You know, this he for a superstar and a player with his resume, he was a very easy guy to manage, and because he was a good teammate, he trained very hard, and on game day the lights came on, and he just put on a show, and he created moments, and that's what these big time players do in the big moments. They make the difference. And that's why you see when these guys come to our league, they still end up holding trophies and are able to week in, week out, make the plays that matter and get points.
Okay, so how do you think he's going to do as a coach? I'm going to put you back on the spot here.
Yeah, that's fine. At first,
you dodged me early. You dodged me. Dodged it earlier. He's pausing. That's a long dramatic pause.
Because you don't know. Nobody knows.
What are you reading up on that wall that you're looking up on the wall? What are you reading?
He's looking at one of his paintings.
Ouija board.
He's looking at Thierry Henry. Yeah. Thierry Henry struggled as a coach. So, you know, it's not for everybody, despite your playing resume.
What he did at Derby was impressive to me. There's a mystique about him, and I think he's been a winner all his life, and I think that his resume and former player, that comes with him, right? And that always gets you in the door sometimes. You talk about me skipping the line a little bit, right? Sometimes that gets you in. That doesn't necessarily mean you get to stay in the world of coaching, as Thierry and some of these people have found out. But I know Wayne enough to know that he loves the game. He's a soccer junkie. He's highly competitive. I think he's sharp tactically. The times we've had discussions, he's certainly been around, some of the greatest managers the game has ever seen. And I think he's also as good as he's going to be tactically and things like that. He's also not going to be overly complex, to kind of a little bit more what we're used to, is like, no, guys, boil this down. This is, sometimes it's just effort, it's fight, it's will, it's getting stuck in, all these things that I think he's also going to have that are still so important to winning games and getting a group to, bring their best every weekend. I think he has a nice balance of that, the nuts and bolts, but also tactics. So I'm rooting for him. I think right now, frankly, it can't get worse. It's been a long year for the club, and it's been tough to watch at times because of the the turbulent nature of it all. And you guys know me; I'm still a romantic with the club, and I still root for it and want it to do really well. So. I do think he's going to be able to maybe bring some a different level of player to the club as well. And he's got probably a better Rolodex than I had.
Do you ever go at him in training or after a game?
Did I ever go at Wayne Rooney?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I'm not sure that would have been the greatest managerial move, there, Chuck. But
yeah.
What do you think would have happened if you did the usual where you pull him aside before training, say, listen, I got to set a little bit of an example today.
Yeah.
I'm gonna light you up because I need everybody to feel like, you know, no one's above the law here, and you're a great leader, and I think you can take this one on the chin.
He's getting a proper headbutt.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think he would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have been fine with it. He'd be like, all right, yeah. I got you. Yeah, he's a team guy, man. His teammates loved him, and he was, again, super competitive. He gets it. You know, I think he never put me in that spot either, which was, you know, I've heard, we've all heard, and some of you guys shared locker rooms with some nightmares, right? Some guys that did put coaches in those spots that had some real cachet and came into this league, and you know, he never put me in those spots.
Are you talking about Rafa Marquez? I think he's talking about Rafa Marquez.
This is the thing I was getting to, is that when I got traded to the Red Bulls, Hans Bacca pulls me inside one day and he's like, listen, you know, when Thierry first comes in, I talked to Arsene Wenger, you know, I'm talking to Pep Guardiola, I'm talking to all these people, trying to get advice on how to manage Thierry Henry. And he goes on to tell me, like, he's asked all these things, and each one of them said, like, hey, we had the option to keep them. We moved Thierry on when we thought that he was whatever. Basically saying, like, once he gets to that point, there's nothing you can do. So then Hans Bacca turns to me and is asking me, like, is there anything that you can do to help in this team with Thierry? And I'm like, dude, I just got here. There's nothing I can do to help. Like, it was like, he was like pleading to get this guy on board. Obviously Thierry was a little bit of a anomaly, but for you, Ben, I remember a January camp, and it was, you were in camp and Freddie Adu was in camp. And this is during peak Freddie hype time. And I remember it was the first day of training that we were actually getting into it, and you absolutely laid him out when he took a second touch. And I remember your teammates, and I remember thinking, like, wow, there is no love lost for this guy who's going to have to go through the trenches of making it as a player. That's a memory that sticks out for me, being in camp with you, just the intensity of that and the fact that, like, this guy is coming from the same club but wasn't given a free pass. What's your favorite memory, I guess, of your experiences as a player that you can call upon, whether it's with the national team or the club level? Because that's my favorite one of you, of just seeing, I mean, Freddie flew. He flew on a tackle. But, like, what do you have, one memory or a memory or a story to share that sticks out?
Regarding Freddie or just in general?
No, just for you. Just in general. Yeah, just a memory that you – because you're so much in the managerial world now. I don't want to lose sight of you as a player, which was fantastic.
Yeah, thanks. My favorite days as a player was when I just turned pro. And went to this team that was so well oiled. I mean, you're talking Harks, Echeverry, Moreno. I mean, people forget about this team. Agus, Yamosa, Pope, Richie Williams, Tony Santa, right? Bruce Arena was the coach. It just went down the list. You're playing with a national team. And I, you know, for me to have that roll of dice and to jump into that atmosphere and to learn from those guys. And, you know, it gave me such a leg up, and to learn what winners look like and just be a cog in that machine. Those were my favorite days, man. Those were great. And they, you know, talking about me hitting Freddie, they used to light me up. And I'd come in, and I thought I was the works. I'd come in there strong, and I was a little bit arrogant, as you probably remember. And you know, they would light me up. But those were great days for that club, and obviously holding all those trophies. You know, I learned a lot of lessons that way. I don't know if that answered your question, Heath.
No, it did. It's fantastic.
Who were you most impressed with in terms of players that you've played with and against in Major League Soccer?
Players with. Yeah. The one guy that it was unsung during those days is Richie Williams. He was a guy that, you know, was really the glue to a lot of those successful teams. That place didn't work without him. And not only what he did, but his communication was amazing. I mean, I was a player that would fade in and out, especially out wide. It was hard for me to concentrate for 90 minutes. And it's almost as if he could smell that in me. And right when I was fading out, he's bringing me in. And He was a huge contributor to all those successful games. Obviously, Marco and Jaime was, you know, these two were very, very special. Ryan Nelson, you know, then we get into that next generation team of success. Aleko was, you know, cut short, but he would have had an unbelievable career. Ryan Nelson again was a real stud. You know, national team, Jimmy Conrad.
No. So
cream Benny. Cheese? No, not cream cheese.
Cream cheese. That's how I'm known here on the pod. That's how much I've evolved as a person. I went from like respectable player, hard worker to cream cheese here in the media world. My question is, first and foremost, I referenced that MLS team that you played on with DC a lot, because back when people try to compare and contrast, that team, everybody starting on that DC United team played for their national team. Now, when you look around MLS, maybe you got three guys that are national team players. Yeah. You know,
except LAFC.
Yeah, well, they're certainly.
Well, Miami's trying to spend all the money to do that themselves. They just,
maybe the average is a little bit higher. But so you've given us some good stories on the club scene. How about on the national team scene? I know you joked around with me, but there was 2006. You and I were sitting next to each other for that opening game against Czech Republic. And when Jan Koller scored in the third minute of the first game, we both looked at each other like, holy shit, these guys are good. And this could be a long game for us. I mean, obviously you don't want to make any facial reactions on the bench. You don't know if the cameras are like throwing at you, but it was kind of like, oh, like the hand in the mouth, like, holy God, these guys are amazing. That was maybe one of the best national team performances I'd ever seen. Playing or being on the bench against the U.S. Do you remember that moment? Because it was crazy.
I remember it happened quick, and they were nasty. And they were nasty. You know, you and I had good seats. We had really good seats for that. I joke I was hanging on to the plane to go to Germany. I was like the last guy on that plane. But I tell you a funny story about Italy. I don't know. Did you played in Italy?
I did. I did play in that one. Yeah. No. I came on. Remember, because Eddie Pope got a second yellow, and I came on at half, basically right after half.
Okay, so yeah, oh, so is that so?
That's why he didn't get the Italian jersey. He said,
I got a few stories about that game. I was going into that game, Jimmy. I don't know if you remember this. They get the red card, right?
Yeah.
De Rossi gets the red card, and we're up a man, and I'm sitting on the bench just enjoying the game. I'm like, I got this game. I was having a blast, and we can't, for some reason, Bruce is upset that we can't get service and we're not getting enough joy out of this, you know, being up a man. He yells down, Ben, get ready. You're going in at right back. Right back. I've never played right back in my entire life. And he's telling me I'm going in at right back in the World Cup for my debut. So I floated out of my seat, and I'm warm in like 30 seconds. I'm so fired up.
I was the same. I warmed up in 30 seconds as well when I knew I was going in. I didn't even need to do anything.
I sprinted 50 times, like in a row, just back and forth in studs on turf. My back was hurting. Anyways, so I was going in, man, right back. I would have changed the entire World Cup that we had. We would have won. And we would have probably at least made it to the semis, but I would have played right back for the rest of my life. However, Pablo goes and gets a red card, and as he gets the red card, I just stop running and I just go sit down. I was like, "Yeah, I'm probably not going in against Luca Toni at this point." Yeah. So yeah, that was that would have been great. It might have changed the history of U.S. soccer.
Oh, that is so good. Is there for you? And this is something we ask everybody, and doesn't need to be the last question. We usually make the last question, but I'm just curious now. Is there a jersey swap that you had that you were most proud of, or one that you got? You know, I've shared the story of all, the entire Spanish national team all telling me they're giving it to their grandmother and saying no to me, basically going straight straight down the supply chain line. Was
in
there
the
anybody?
Locker. Yeah, in the locker. Yeah, we're doing the locker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was there anyone
that's a slap to the face?
Yeah.
That's
was there one. Anyone that blew you off, or anyone that you wished you got, or one that you're proud of that you got during your career?
I've had some good ones. You know, Raul was cool. And most people have been good. You know, the old David Beckham story. You guys probably remember that one?
No.
I got a lot of shit for that one. His first game was at RFK, and he came into the match, and it was on live television, of course, when he was at LA, and we smashed him because it was 130 degrees. And so anyways, after the game, of course, the camera's to him, and I'm running by him, and I like jog up to him a little bit. I'm a little bit ashamed that I like jog up to him, and, you know, change jerseys like David Beckham, right? And he does it, you know, he gives me his jersey, but the whole thing's on television. So I'm like, I look like that guy.
it's still in your closet. So it's in your,
I don't even know where they are. They're on a big box, but Raul, Appiah, I remember Appiah taking his off at the Ghanaian game. And it was like, it was just like out of him. It was just like, I was like, I didn't want to take my shirt off. I felt like, dude, I'm not taking my shirt off. You're twice the size of me. There's a lot of them. I've been lucky enough to be, you know, into some playing against some wonderful players, and I didn't get one in that Argentina game.
No, they weren't training with anybody. No, hey, I didn't get one either.
But Eddie got one at halftime. You remember that?
Eddie traded with Carlos Tevez at halftime.
Eddie's the best. Eddie had it all figured out.
But he did it on the field, I think. I don't think he did it on the field?
It was coming into the tunnel. I was like, this guy's trading jerseys with
Tevez. Of course he did.
The tunnel. And he comes in and Bob's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
He said that at halftime?
I remember Bob was pissed at halftime. The halftime was weird against Argentina. It was only 1-1 at that point.
Bob brought it up saying also we got people changing shirts at halftime. And it's not exactly a mystery at that point who he's talking about. It wasn't like there was a whole team of people changing shirts.
I said that at halftime.
Eddie had the jersey like on his shoulder. Like,
hey, man, you got to capture moments, man. You got to capture moments.
That's right.
Yeah. And you talk about teams you play against. That was like a dream team, a video game when you see that whole starting 11 in their bench. God,
that was a fun group.
Yeah, you played against Riquelme. It was like Ben Olsen versus Riquelme.
It was similar style, similar players.
Very similar. Very similar. In terms of coaches that are managing teams right now, who are you most surprised that has done, you know, a really good job? That you may have been like, not so much like you're shocked that they can coach, but you're like, wow,
that's
they've
a tough question because I'll be throwing someone under the bus there, Charlie.
No, but that you've been really impressed with that they've done a really good job.
I'm not surprised at all. But I love seeing what Pablo's doing right now. I'm a big fan of him and his management style, and in some ways I feel
he manages the same way as you?
I feel like a kindred spirit to him and certain managers in that ilk. So I am excited that he's got this opportunity and the journey he went through where he went back and he evaluated and he came back as an assistant coach and then came here. And now he's such a better coach for, I'm sure he'll tell you, of going through what he initially did in the same way as me. He's going into something where he's not necessarily ready. You take your lumps, you learn a little bit, then you go back, you appreciate the game. He comes back, learns a little bit through licensing and dealing with other coaches, and now he's getting his shot. And it's a really neat kind of, for me, it's a neat thing to watch. But it's a very interesting league to coach in. And I say this all the time. I think it's a difficult league to coach in. I think you see, it's nice to see the American coaches still kicking ass and some foreign coaches coming in and doing well and bringing different structures and tactical, strategies that, again, make it really difficult for a coach. Every weekend you're dealing with a different type of structure and coach and from anywhere in the world, and three back, four back, you know, it's different every week. And you have to prepare in that way, I think, more so than a lot of leagues in the world.
What's next for you? Like, what are you ultimately in the end? What's the dream job for you, knowing everything you know now? Like, ultimately, at the end of the road.
That's a great question, Charlie. I wish I had the answer for that. But I took a job about a year ago with the Spirit in the NWSL as the president, and it was fascinating because, you know, I lived in this lane in the men's game and as a coach for 10 years, and then I jumped into this president role, and then ended up being also the general manager. So I got this other look at the game of soccer, whether it's infrastructure, marketing, HR, right? Ticket sales, all these other things that, you know, we knew they went on, but I didn't know anything about them. So it was a fun crash course in the other side of sports, a professional sports organization. So it gave me a taste of all these other things, including the general manager role. So I'm using this time to still, at 45 years old, evaluate what I want to do for the rest of my life. And as you guys know, I spent a lot of time in my studio painting, and that's a real... that's something I'll do for the rest of my life. I enjoy it. And it's nice at my age to get better at something and push yourself that is a different lane than what you've lived in all your life. And I'm sure you guys are doing that in different avenues yourself. So I'm just throwing a lot of darts right now. I'm doing some television just to see what that looks like. As a player, I said, I'll never be a coach. As a coach, I said, I will never be a pundit. I'll never be on live television. So I continue to just lie to myself throughout my whole life. And so now, I'm going to give that a try and see if I'm any good at that or if that catches. And I'm open. I'm open to a lot of different things right now.
All right, we're here with Ben Olsen, Waxing Philosophic, with us. Before we let you go, and we appreciate your time, Mr. Ben Olsen, you were on the cover of FIFA 2001. We don't get too many cover stars here. No. Kylian Mbappe has not agreed to come on the show.
No, that's Echeverry. That's Echeverry. That's not
it's kind of like you and Echeverry mixed in. If you're watching this on the YouTubes, go look at the 2001 FIFA cover. So they get EA comes up to you and says, do you want to be on the cover? Which we don't see very often with, like, a holding midfielder, a central midfielder. But there you are. And there's a jinx with the Madden cover. There's all these jinxes with some of these covers at times. Tell us, like, you get this, now you're on the cover. Do you feel like this extra amount of pressure for having to be the guy now that you're the big guy on this cover?
I heard about the jinx. You know, some people said something to me about it after I did it, of course. But I didn't care. I mean, I was, for some reason, I was kind of the hot young thing at that point, like this young kid that out of college, and there wasn't a lot of competition for people in America to get on FIFA. They gave me $5,000 for that, and that's it. But that, I'm sure today's standard, it would be, who knows?
That was big back then.
Oh, right? Dude, are you kidding me? I was pleased as punch. I was like, yeah, I'll take that. And
by the time it got to Mo and Sasha, I think it was up to like 75, which was just a few years later. So they started scaling that up right after.
I think it got there pretty quick. It didn't help that mine was for Sega or Atari. But that was fun.
We appreciate you, big man. It's always great to spend time with you. We hope you come back and join us soon. Though you might be bigger than us at some point now that you're on TV, you're this big famous star.
No, guys, I've been listening to you guys. You guys are doing a great job. Three of my favorite guys in this game, and you guys are doing great stuff for this sport in this country. So I appreciate you guys.
Well, Ben Olsen, the quickest way to our heart is placating our egos. So you're welcome anytime, my friend. Let's give it up for Ben Olsen. Woo! All right, everybody. We're going to take our first and only break of the show. When we come back, we're going to do our best managers, like the best 11 with the managers that have managed in MLS. Will Ben Olsen make the cut? Will he be in the top 11? Come back and find out.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Welcome back, everyone, to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And if you were not watching that on YouTube, we just ran a promo for the incredible Brianna Scurry documentary that's called The Only. It's now streaming live on Paramount Plus. Go and watch it.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. She's incredible. She's
Brianna
a role model.
Brianna is the ultimate OG.
She is. I mean, it's someone I've been watching for a long time when the U.S. Women's National Team really started to emerge back in the day and obviously helped win the 1999 World Cup. And Brandi Chastain, who scored the winning penalty, said I wouldn't even have been in that position without Brianna Scurry. So the fact that there's actually been something made for her, telling her life story, is awesome. Really important. It's so important. So I just want to make sure that if you didn't see it on YouTube, just listening to this in podcast form, go over to Paramount Plus and give that a watch. It is really, really powerful, I think is the word I'm looking for. Also, just to throw it out there, we are nominated for the best podcast category in the People's
Let's
Choice Podcast
go.
Awards. Vote for In Soccer We Trust at podcastawards.com/app/slide, sign up, and then toggle down to the best podcast category. Find us and say, these are my guys. We want them to win more trophies to put them in their cabinets. All right. So who wants to go first with our best?
Let me go first. I've been waiting for this.
And so just so everybody knows the ground rules here. Mm-hmm. It's any person that's managed, even caretaker manager, interim coach in MLS to form your best 11, like those players or managers that used to be players that, I mean, I think you know the rules, but
we do.
Okay, cool. So Charlie, you've seemed very eager to go first. I'm curious to see.
Yes.
Okay. So Charlie, go ahead and take it away. Give us your best 11.
All right, I'm going Walter Zenga in goal, the international.
No love for Brad Friedel.
You talk about caretakers. I mean, Walter Zenga, are you kidding me? He was the man.
Okay.
How could you not put him? And then I went Stevie Nicol at right back. We know what he was able to do with Liverpool. Jaap Stam.
Wait. Zenga and Nicol are both New England Revolution coaches, and you played for. I just want to make sure we understand the bias that's happening.
Yeah, okay.
Those are great choices. I don't want to take anything from Stevie Nicol.
Okay.
Amazing.
Jaap Stam, and I would have had De Boer on the other side, so Stam would be my left center back. But
okay,
it is beside the point. Gabriel Heinze, left back. Then Patrick Vieira and Ruud Gullit. So Ruud Gullit was obviously one of the best players to ever play for the Netherlands. Okay, so that's my six.
Good choice.
And then I got Guillermo Barros-Schelotto as my left winger, Preki on my right side, because, you know, he likes to cut in.
He does cut in the
And Peter Novak was incredible with his time with the Chicago Fire and just with 1860 Munich. And then Thierry Henry up top. Come at me. Mm. Although
that's a lot of personalities, first and foremost. That is, those guys would be, I mean, I've played with some of these guys and against them, they would be bitching at each other pretty much the whole game. But they probably still have a lot of success.
They'd have
a lot of success. You go on next. Who's your coach?
All right, wait, but who would you take?
So my whole thing is that when I built my team, I tried to lean heavily towards the highest level players that had a degree of success as a coach in Major League Soccer. So mine's going to be a little bit skewed differently as opposed to the best 11 of anybody that touched ground in the U.S. So mine skews a little bit differently. But it's got some. It's got Zenga as well, just because he was probably the one.
Wow, you had Zenga too. Let's go, Heath. Hey,
Jimmy, I went with Zenga just because of the fact that short time, not a terrible run, and it's a massive name. You got to have that on there. Brad Friedel's. I mean, if anybody was going to put Brad Friedel on, it had to be Charlie, and Charlie didn't do it, so I got the
pass.
Yeah,
that's true.
So if you want to direct your anger, direct it to the comments, box that is on Charlie's desk, not mine.
This is interesting.
Mine went to degrees. I tried to look at it through the lens of, like, instead of building just the best 11 only of biggest name players and most impressive players during their time that just happened to get into coaching, I looked at it through the lens of, like, building a team of coaches who've had some degree of success, right? Won something, got to a final of something. So I had Greg Vanney, obviously won an MLS Cup, solid player. I don't know if Greg Vanney went to a World Cup, but I know he was in contention at one point.
He didn't, no.
He didn't?
No.
But he spent some time in the national team, had his career in France as well. Dom Kinnear, another winner within the league, defender. Just somebody that's a lifer, but also made it to the national team level. I believe Dom went to a World Cup. Maybe he didn't. He was also somewhere in that sort of long term in the national team.
Okay.
Greg Berhalter as a coach, successful as a coach and as a player. So I've got him on my list. Stevie Nichol, similarly, won some, like, a winning type of coach. I didn't want to go with just people that had trophies only. Patrick Vieira, I don't believe. I don't think he won a Supporters Shield, but he built a good team. And I just love Patrick Vieira. He's awesome. He just had to be in my team. Jesse Marsh, Supporter Shield winner with New York, solid midfielder as well as a player. Adrian Heath, fantastic career as a player, and he got the credit for me just because he's put in the time in Major League Soccer, and with that
and USL before that,
yeah, and you know, coming from Orlando and USL, and then you know USL, he might have been was he in Austin before USL? Wait,
hey, Charlie, is it weird he went? Like, his name is Heath Pierce, and he went with somebody named Heath. I don't know. I'm just
Yeah. Savarese should have gotten it if this was the NASL 11, but then obviously first year has done well and continued to do well in Portland. So he's on my list. Vermees, I couldn't leave out. Just again.
So how does Preki not get in this? I don't know how Ryan Nelson doesn't get in this according to your standards and Preki.
Okay.
Yeah, Preki, two-time MLS MVP. Didn't he get Coach of the Year with Chivas USA one season? Assistant with Seattle. I don't know. I agree with you, Charlie. This is sus. Little sus.
Why is it? You think because of the fact that...
What about Tab Ramos? Like, I mean, that's another guy I feel like...
What was his coaching career in MLS?
He's playing in here.
But what was his coaching career in MLS?
Average. Bang average.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the point that I'm bringing up is mixed their coaching accolades and their playing accolades and tried to build a team out of those two things other than just being, you know, putting the biggest names. And then Thierry Henry, I actually think he got the team to the playoffs his first year, not a great record, and then ends up leaving shortly after. But he's Thierry Henry. It was like I needed to make a few exceptions because by and large, when I went with my model, it was going to be 95% Americans in there without shifting it a little bit, just because the Americans have tended to stick around longer. And there's a little bias to that because most guys that are coaching that are not American aren't looking to get another MLS job, right? They're going to go try to find a job somewhere else or continue their career elsewhere. Whereas most
Americans, no Ben Olsen for either one of you guys. That's that's a real knock to our special guest.
I agree, but he's definitely, you know, and in Ben's words, he's hanging on the plane to make my 18 in this. My 11. Sorry, he makes my 18, but he's hanging on for my 11. He's a spot starter in this group, but Yeah, right. That was my combination of.
Yeah.
Of
I want to see. I want to see Jimmy's. I'm really.
All curious. Right, let's go. Let's go to mine. Let's throw it up. It's kind of a mix of your two. Yours. I got Friedel in goal, though. I went with Friedel, mainly more based on his playing career, not his bit of a train wreck. I have a couple of train wreck managers in this team. Rudholtz, another one who was an absolute disaster for the Galaxy during his time. I went with Cherundolo. I think Stevie Nichols probably the better choice in terms of what we're trying to do here. But there was Neville. Neville could have been there. Neville could have been there. So I went with Cherundolo. Okay. Jaap Stam, another train wreck in the league as a manager.
Absolute train wreck.
I'll go Robin Fraser, though. Not a train wreck. Big fan of Robin. I got to train with the Galaxy when I was 19 or 20, and he was the big center back with Vanny and Dan Kalichman and those guys, and I always looked up to them. So
I might have trouble understanding these things that we make, guys, because I seem to always be off the mark of what we're trying to build here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I asked the question, and what I was told was best 11, period.
That's what I said. That's what I thought.
In terms of managers, nothing to do with success, because if you throw in success, then this completely changes. I mean,
you could probably make like a train wreck manager best 11 that would be pretty good, because you got Jaap Stam, Friedel, Vieira.
Yeah.
Not Vieira, Hullet, Henri's kind of on the fence. So Gabriel Heinze, another train wreck left back. I just looked at him like his playing career. Vanny, in terms of like success.
Literally, in the very first one from producer Dez, says Gabriel Heinze out on account of how lousy a job he did at Atlanta. So I took that as there's got to be some sort of a value to being successful manager.
And there's a lot of people.
Kobe Jones was an interim.
No, yeah.
Yeah, Kobe Jones was an interim. He had like a cup of coffee as a guy.
So wasn't Walter Zenga. So wasn't Zenga. But I will say Rooney would obviously be in our 11. I didn't take into account Rooney.
I didn't take into account either. He actually hasn't started the job yet. I wouldn't say I've started the job yet, because they've lost every game since he.
Yeah, he really hasn't. He hasn't been on the sideline. So I didn't count Rooney yet.
Yeah, I had to get Preki in there for the same reasons that you did, Chuck. Kobe Jones, I just wanted to give a shout out to a player that I don't think actually gets the respect that he deserves.
He definitely does not.
Unbelievable career. And I got to watch him play when he was at UCLA back in the day. That's what I was aspiring to play to. There was no MLS at the time to aspire to. So I am very familiar with Kobe for a long time. So I would love to see
Charlie's again, producer Alex. If you throw,
throw it up
based on Charlie's parameters, I've got some agreements and maybe some disagreements as well.
Throw it up.
Just to look at it through the lens of best 11. Okay. I mean, it's pretty solid. Again, you could maybe call for Neville or Cherundolo
over Stevie Nichols. So
Neville.
We're not talking Gary Neville. This is Phil Neville. There's a big difference.
Yeah, that's true. But he was still solid at Man United and then Everton.
Don't throw in Man United because he had a sip of coffee.
No, he was there for a bit. Yeah,
but he wasn't Gary Neville. He wasn't playing like
that's
that.
True. Still made it.
Maybe at Everton. Yeah, sure.
Still playing Europe with Everton.
We're talking Stevie Nichol, bro. We're talking Stevie Nichol.
That's so. Preki for sure. I would put Preki in. I've loved Preki since he was an indoor player. I agree with that. Hullet, you could actually put him on any line. Vieira.
Yep.
Scalotto's one where I just think about.
What a player, though.
Yep. Go ahead,
unbelievable.
Jimmy.
Unbelievable. Dude. I agree.
Playing against him, that guy's tiny. I could never get the ball off of him. Never. Who could you put close?
Who could you put on there? I went through every single manager ever in the history of MLS. There is not a single person that you could take Schelotto off for. Not a single.
I actually struggled to fill my winger spots based on my parameters of having some sort of success. I ended up playing. Yeah. Like, it was actually pretty shocking. It's actually saying more than anything that. Based on my parameters, not a lot of good attackers, successful as managers,
or goalies.
I continue to say, especially
goalies.
Wingers. There is not a good winger / coach out there that I've come across consistently. And goalies as well. Yeah, it was Brad Friedel, but Brad Friedel, I don't think was all that had a good window and still wasn't, I think, successful. Zenga was the one where I was just like, what a cool name to throw on anyway.
Brad Friedel had zero success as a manager. I would say in terms of guys who did well, Pablo Mascherini, but is not playing over any of those guys. Oscar Perea, Greg Berhalter, Tab Ramos, Steve Cherundolo.
How about Matias Almeida? Played two World Cups for Argentina.
Yeah, I was going to say Aaron Vinter as well with Toronto FC.
Vinter, that's a great shout for dumpster fire picks.
Ryan Nelson. Let's see. You could, I know, talk about Peter Vermees, Carl Robinson, Robin Fraser. That's about it.
I had Clavijo as a potential backup left back as well at a certain point. Just again, as because of the fact that Clavijo, I think, played in a World Cup, and he also was, I think he got a supporter shield at some point as a coach. But that was a shout out, you know, rest in peace, Fernando. But like that was another one that was on my list as well. I was like, I was trying to build some depth through these positions based on very different parameters. But yeah,
I'm trying to think of the all dumpster fire 11 because you could have Friedel and goal.
Yeah,
Heinze, De Boer, Stam.
Yeah,
you could have not Aaron Vinter.
Neville.
Yeah,
still
you could have
Aaron Vinter. Almeida. Yeah, yeah, Vinter's in there for sure. Almeida. Yeah.
Would you put Neville? Neville's not come out of a dumpster fire yet.
I don't know. Henri might need to be on that list.
Henri made the playoffs though. I'll give Henri the
that's
playoffs.
That's true. And it was he struggled more with Monaco. That's true.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Veljko Panovic.
Panovic. He could be on there for sure.
Wouldn't Peter Novak be on your dumpster fire 11 then? If it was based
Novak would be in the dumpster. Yes, for a whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah, but not the results because he won an MLS Cup in 2004. He was the head coach.
He did have a DC. I was thinking more of his time in Philly. Really,
I mean, yeah, that's true.
All the other, all the extra stuff.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then who else would be on that dumpster fire 11?
Jason Kreis? No, he won an MLS Cup.
No, he won a 2009 Cup.
He's trending in that direction, Kreis.
I'm just kidding. I love you, Jay. Yeah. I'm raising the roof in your honor.
Who else is there? Gosh, there's got to be a couple more in that dumpster fire 11 that
just really sucked.
Let me go. I'm looking at the list right now.
I'm looking at the list. I'm looking as well at the list.
I would put Shelis Hyndman as the coach of my dumpster fire 11 because he had a team that could have been great and just destroyed it. So he's coaching the dumpster fire 11 for me. Who else is there? There's got to be.
There's other guys for sure. Let us know if you're listening or watching this right now. Hit us up in the comments or hit us up at ISWTPod on Twitter. ISWTPod on Twitter. Drop us a follow. Let us know.
Get us out of this, Jimmy, before we get in trouble, man.
You know what? Actually, this is a great time to end the show. It is done, and Soccer with Trust is over for today. But we're coming back at you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. We're gonna get after it. It's actually a mailbag episode. So if you have any questions as well for us, and don't bring ask them. Us to continue our dumpster fire 11 managers, because we want to end the show right now. Hit us up in the comments now, but preferably hit us up on Twitter, ISWTPod. Any question you want answered, we will do that tomorrow. It's a special mailbag episode. Go make that happen. We appreciate your guys' support. So on behalf of producer Des, producer Alex, our special guests Ben Olson, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.